Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going well, the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast wind, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Wednesday, March the 23rd, 2022. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio at blogtalkradio.com. 7 days, seven shows, starting Mondays with Vito Esposito and Big Al, the Vito Esposito Show, featuring Big Al, 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Tuesday, it's Eric with the Cross and Crescent discussion at 6 p.m. Eastern. And then, of course, 5:30 every Wednesday, me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff is in with the Sutliffian Report at 6 o'clock Eastern. And then Friday, 12 noon Eastern time, although that's one you should check because it does time can change on that one more often. Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. And then rock solid Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern to midnight Eastern, Minister Usama Dakdak, along with the beautiful Christie, Revealing the Truth About Islam. That's 10 p.m. on Saturdays. And then Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Reminder that you can't just come in and take part. You have to download an app and get permission, so to speak, hey, if you want to interact with the show, several ways. You can always email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go into Facebook, look for Hank Jones Poly Sports. I post stuff on occasion. And then, of course, Twitter, at hpolysports. I'm more active there than I am probably on, definitely more than Facebook. Facebook, like I said, Candy Crush time. And then, of course, the other way, if you can come in through the website and get into the chat room, Indy Hawk KB is there right this second. And then, of course, you can also call in at 319-527-6706. We have several numbers lit up there right now. And you can do that. You can talk. You can hit the one on your phone. You get this little, icon. It's like a little hand. Sometimes it's creepy looking to me. And it doesn't always look like it's a hand that's raised. But anyway, Do that, and I'll know that you want to talk. I would say wife and little Aussie are in the house, but that would not be true. Little Aussie is in the house, but wife is out gallivanting around, conducting business of some kind. I think she's something to do with paddleboarding today. So she'll be back at some point during the show. I hope, anyway. Okay, let's get to the obituaries. Last Wednesday, we lost a longtime Chicago media personality, journalist. Her name was Mary D. She was 85. She was on WGN for a long time. Most Chicagoans will remember her. She was very tough. She had a talk show on Channel 44, WSNS, one of the shows where channels where I would watch wrestling. But anyway, she had a talk show on there back in the late 60s, early 70s, and she was having dinner with an interview subject, a guy that was going to be on her show. They were on their way back. Outside the studio, they got kidnapped and driven to like a I don't know if it was a state park or a county park, and each of them were shot in the head. She was shot twice in the head. She survived, believe it or not, was given last rites several times. She survived, and she later spent 36 years at WGN, which is, of course, Chicago's original superstation, I guess you'd call it. But, yeah, life well-lived. Friday, we lost Alaska Republican Representative Don Young at age 88. He lost consciousness on a flight from Los Angeles to Seattle. He was on his way, you know, he was en route to Alaska. Longest-serving Republican in congressional history, and will actually be just the 43rd person to lie in state in the U.S. Capitol since 1852. He'll lie in state next Tuesday, March 29th. Friday, we also lost Hall of Fame sportscaster, former ESPN NFL guy, John Clayton, 67 after a brief unspecified illness. He was a good man. I like John Clayton. Knew his football. Definitely will be missed. And today, we lost former Secretary of State and U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Madeleine Albright, to cancer at age 84. Probably best known as the first female to serve as Secretary of State. She did that under Bill Clinton in his second term. He appointed her as U.N. ambassador during his first term. She's probably better known as answering a question, better known to me. A journalist posed a question to her during the 2012 presidential campaign, asked, how long are you going to blame the previous administration for all of your problems? And she answered, forever. And she meant it. She was also involved in investments with George Soros, among others, who, much like Madeleine Albright's family, abandoned Judaism in World War II and pretended to be Christian. They said they converted, but they were just avoiding persecution. And it's one way to do it. I don't know. I guess I shouldn't say much, but it doesn't ring true to me when they do certain stuff like that. But today we also lost Russian journalist. Her name was Oksana Balina. She was 42, and she was killed in Kiev while covering the Russian bombing of the Ukrainian capital city. I think the 15th, they say now, Russian journalist, killed during that attack, that aggression, if you will. Well, let's get to news. We lead off with the travesty at the NCAA Women's Swimming Championships, where Will Thomas, pretending to be Leah Thomas, won one event, finished fifth in another, and then finished last, eighth, in his last final event, where he was in three finals, she, whatever. Will Leah won the 500-yard freestyle, finished fifth in the 200, and eighth and last in the 100 final. At the medal ceremony for the 500-yard event, while Thomas and her crank stood on the winner's podium, the second and third place finishers took a spot on the third-place podium, along with another competitor, an actual woman, who finished in fourth place. Emma Wyant, Erica Sullivan, and Brooke Ford were the second, third, and fourth-place finishers. Of course, several athletes and organizations have called the results a travesty, while some of the twisted counter-protesters actually showed up to support the crank-wielding Thomas. Last month, an anonymous letter from 16 of Thomas's 40 teammates was circulated protesting Thomas's position on the team is unfair. The letter noted Thomas's ranking at 462 while competing as a male, versus the number one rank she now holds as, quote, female. It should be noted that last month also saw new NCAA guidelines that will in the future more strictly regulate testosterone levels for transgender athletes and also leave a lot of it up to the individual sports. Kelly J. Keene is a spokeswoman for a group that protested called Standing for Women. She said it best, she said it very well. There is every feasible way that it is an act of grave cowardice by the NCAA. And she's right. Willia Thomas had no business competing at this year's NCAA Women's Championships in any sports. With that in mind, I possibly scored a few minutes with someone purporting to be Willia Thomas to talk about the events and how he or she is feeling these days. This interview may or may not be serious. Misuse of any and all registered trademarks and copyrights, along with the use of air quotes, is purely intentional. So let's see how it goes. Willia, welcome to Hank Jones Polysports. How are you?
Well, Hank, I'm feeling kind of cranky. Some folks are just jealous, that's all it is. But I tune it out.
Is this Willia? By the way, I used air quotes there when I called you Willia. Is that okay? And what the hell is with your voice, L-O-L-A, Lola?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Hank. I must have had a frog in my throat. What
the hell? Oh, that's right. You grew up in Texas. Try putting a little cowboy or a cowgirl in your accent next time. And a little less molasses or sorghum or whatever it is they put on their corn cakes down in the South.
I aim to do just that, partner. And about those jealous skirts, I kicked their asses. That's what I went to do, and I did it, boy. I was the only one out there with any balls. Real balls, I say.
Okay, I guess that's a little more Texas. Maybe a bit too much cowboy, not enough cowgirl. Anyhow. What prompted the whole swim as a girl thing? I mean, did you already throw like a girl? You know, kind of like Barack Obama trying to throw on a first pitch?
Mr. Hank, I think President Obama and Big Mike, Michelle, are lovely people. I believe if I play my cards right, I'll get a chance to go to swim with them at Martha's Vineyard.
Well, of course, that's quite the aspiration, Willia. Back to competitive swimming, though, as Bill Murray said in Caddyshack, the hell, why?
You saw my times, right? They sucked. But I figured, hey, I can trounce these chicks, straight or lesbo. Doesn't matter to me. I'll take them all.
Actually, in fact, you didn't. Your aspersions aside, you actually lost out on a clean sweep. You won just one race. Which, you know, you were in two other finals. The final one, you were last. How do you explain those results?
Well, Mr. Hank, I do declare.
Willia, remember Texas, not Alabama?
Well, all I can say is that those other gals cheated, or the race officials, or somebody. Somebody must have cheated. That's the only way they can beat me in these skirt races.
Okay, enough of that. So, air quote, Willia, some people have actually supported you, usually the pseudo-academic and virtue-signaling types, with a few other wackos thrown in. Meanwhile, tons of people, athletes, politicians, gay, straight, doesn't matter, they've been solidly against you. And this morning, one notable transgender, Caitlyn Jenner, formerly known as Bruce Jenner, Olympic decathlete, stated that your NCAA participation was a travesty, boards, and it shouldn't count. Your thoughts?
Jealous bastard, Hank. That's all I got to say on that. He's obviously not packing the way I am, if you know what I mean.
Well, unfortunately, I do know what you mean. Hold on a second. I think we got another caller. You're on Hank Jones Polysports. May I have your name?
Hank, this is Dr. Fauci. First, I want to say I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to let everyone know I am the science and to congratulate Mr. and Ms. Thomas.
Seriously, Doc, only one of them can race at a time.
Hey, follow the science, Jonesy. Follow the science. If you did, you'd know.
Okay, that guy's done. That guy's done. I want the producers to block that guy's number. Write this down, Vito, 555-1234. Again, that's 555-1234. Jeez. Well, anyway, air quote, Willia, this is really going nowhere. We obviously don't agree on the fact that your participation in women's sports is unfair. It's, in fact, a sham. So be it. We will let the sports, and of course, I'm sure eventually the courts, decide that another day. But any final
balls to do what I did?
Yeah, speaking of which, do you think you could have beaten one of those Russian or other Eastern Bloc athletes back in the 1970s and 80s?
I don't know. I say we measure.
Oh, dude, you're a creep. That's enough. We're done here.
Wait, Mr. Hank. I just want to say I'm proud of what I did. I'm proud of all but 16 of my teammates, and I can't wait to monetize all this.
Okay, that's enough. That is it. You both of you are cut off. Oh, well, maybe, I guess, maybe Bravo or the Oprah Winfrey Network. One of those is going to pick this crap up. One of those other purveyors of this mindless drivel. Until then, though, my guess is we're going to have to fight back until sanity finally prevails. If that guy that called saying he was Fauci is any indication, by the way, science, in air quotes, of course, science is not going to be any use during this ongoing debate. Obviously, they're not following the science, so there you go. That's what happened at the NCAA Women's Swimming Championships. I was not there to see it, but I'm here to report it. Okay, something a little more rational. The latest victim of cancel culture, who, by the way, isn't even alive to defend himself. Yeah, that's right. In this case, it's cancel culture in the form of, I guess, anti-Russian sentiment over that country's invasion of Ukraine. By the way, anyone remember back in the day when they called it the Ukraine? You'd say the Ukraine. Remember that? Yeah, they did that. Anyway, former Soviet Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin, the first man to travel to space on April 12, 1961, including the first orbit of Earth, has had his name removed from an event that was intended to remember and commemorate his achievements. It was called Yuri's Night. It's been observed annually by the Space Foundation. It's now been renamed A Celebration of Space. Discover what's next. Seriously. Look, nobody was any more anti-Soviet than I was back in the day. I mean, I still have trouble accepting the Soviet basketball team having like three chances to beat the U.S. men's team at the 1972 Olympics, remember, in Munich. But I also believe you give credit where it's due. And that includes Yuri Gagarin. Look, he went into space aboard a rocket. It wasn't necessarily considered reliable or safe. And many space travel devotees have said that both Soviet and American space programs often took unnecessary risks, you know, just to be first or fastest or farthest or longest or whatever. But the guys like Gagarin and the early cosmonauts, and of course the U.S.'s own, you know, like original Mercury 7, they were really the hardcore guys. I mean, most of them were test pilots or former combat pilots. They took risk as a daily habit. It wasn't something they had time to contemplate, nor that they would. In fact, Gagarin was actually held back from further space flight after his original flight until he became the backup cosmonaut for Vladimir Komarov, who was a friend of his. On Vostok 1, and that was a mission that ended with the death of Gagarin's friend, Vladimir Komarov. And both Komarov and Gagarin had voiced their displeasure with the unsafe elements of the spacecraft and the unreasonable push to get the flight up, much the way Gus Grissom voiced his concerns leading up to the Apollo 1 disaster. I read somewhere, I think it was Florida Today, the old Florida Today, a reporter had asked, what's it like being up there high above everyone else on top of all that marvelous machinery? And his answer was, well, tell me how you'd feel high above everyone else on top of all that machinery, knowing that each and every piece of it was made by the lowest bidder. So, yeah, you know, after Komarov's death, by the way, Gagarin was banned from further space flight, and that was the Soviet way. They didn't want to lose a space hero in an accident, or more accurately, a space failure. But so he was taken away from flying. He wasn't even allowed to fly solo as an Air Force pilot. Eventually got clearance to fly again. Eventually went up with in a training run with a training pilot trainer, whatever, who they don't know exactly what happened, but they crashed and both died. And so the Soviets had lost their first space hero. But now, I mean, I'm sorry, this is beyond ridiculous. Yuri Gagarin was the first person in space. Nobody disputes that. Nobody questions that. And whether or not he was Soviet or American or anything else is immaterial. He was the first. And April 12th has been commemorated since that took place, and it should be. Taking his name off an event 60-plus years later over an event that's totally unconnected is idiotic and frankly disrespectful. I mean, when cosmonauts like Komarov and Gagarin died, American astronauts mourned them and paid tribute to them. They understood the risks that cosmonauts took because they were taking those risks themselves. And though they couldn't do it publicly, cosmonauts often sent condolences when NASA lost astronauts like Gus Grissom and Ed White and Roger Chaffee in the Apollo 1 test failure. And really, Sam Shepard's character, he was playing Chuck Yeager in The Right Stuff, said it best. His character, he said, it takes a special kind of man to volunteer for a suicide mission, especially when it's on TV. But, of course, because the Space Foundation has to be all mainstream and PC, we now have a cheapened version of an event that's meant to commemorate one of the most significant events and achievements of our time. Oh, by the way, yeah, it's still a fundraising event. It's just friggin' depressing. Okay, it's apparently become all the rage among big left to test positive for COVID. Remember when only unvaccinated Republican Neanderthals were getting it? Yeah, not anymore. Remember Barack Hussein Obama earlier this month or late last month, and then yesterday morning, Umgen Umsaki. And last night, the latest hot case is that of Hillary Rotten Clinton. She tweeted out Tuesday night that she had tested positive, but that her hubby Bill has not. Think about this, though. Think about this. After everything that guy has probably had, I'd say COVID probably has no chance of getting into his system. I mean, seriously, good God, the bacteria fighting it out for a trip through that guy's bloodstream. Yeah, that's pay-per-view worthy, no doubt, no doubt. Yeah, but yeah, it's funny. When that first when Tom Hanks and his wife first reported it a couple of years ago, I remember a friend of mine from my hometown saying, he said, you watch, it's going to become sort of a cause celeb to say you have COVID. And remember, for a while it was, and then they changed the narrative, of course, and made it about either unvaccinated or dubious Republicans and conservatives getting it. But remember, for a while, remember celebrities were like doing all this little stuff about how they're quarantining and self-quarantining. I remember there were a couple. I don't remember who it was, but there was one female, probably a legit female, not a fake female like Willia, who I remember saying, talking about the grueling times of quarantining and everything, turning out that person never had COVID or had never tested positive for COVID, but just knew what a tough fight it was quarantining at home. Well, evidently that's become the rage again on Big Left. It's now we're seeing all these people on Big Left that are testing positive for COVID. So be ready for a lot more. I'm surprised LeBron James hasn't yet. He'd be allowed to play though. Yeah, that's just it. Here's an interesting little piece. The revitalized USFL, United States Football League. Remember that was the former spring summer pro league that basically couldn't compete against the NFL in the 1980s. Donald Trump was one of the owners. They've released the rules for their new revamped league, which begins play next month, April 16th. It's less than a month away. Here's a few of the interesting rules. Okay. Let me look here. The 3-point conversion, an alternative option for the onside kick, and a best-of-3-play shootout in overtime are among these. Okay, so scoring teams will now have a third option. Normally, you kick for the point. You go for two. Now, a 3-point attempt is a successful scrimmage play from the 10-yard line. Indy Hawk, what do you think? T-Bodie, what do you think? You going for those? You going for that 3-pointer? I can guarantee you Kirk Ferentz will not coach in the NFL because he would never go for the three-pointer. A second option to retain possession after scoring versus an onside kick will be converting a fourth and 12 from the team's 33-yard line. I'm not sure why the 33 and why fourth and 12. Why not make it a fourth and 12 from the 32 to get to the 20? I don't get it, but whatever. Or maybe it's your own 33. Maybe that's what it is. Because they're kicking off from the 25. Anyway, in overtime, each team's offense will alternate plays against the opposing defense from the 2-yard line. So you're just alternating plays. Each successful attempt gets 2 points. The team with the most points after 3 plays wins. Subsequent attempts after that become sudden death if the score is tied after each team runs 3 plays. And that will extend until a winner is declared. And then the two forward passes from behind the line of scrimmage are legal. Two forward passes behind the line of scrimmage are legal. Each coach will be allowed 1 replay challenge. USFL Replay Command at Fox Sports Control Center in Los Angeles will make all replay decisions. All kickoffs will be from the 25. No kicking team member may line up any further back than 1 yard, so you don't get that running start. The receiving team must have at least 8 players in the setup zone between their 35 and 45. After a kickoff travels 20 yards, the first touch must be by the receiving team. And if an untouched kickoff becomes dead, the ball belongs to the receiving team at that spot. On punts, gunners may not line up outside the numbers, meaning like the hash marks basically, and they cannot be double team blocked until the ball is kicked. The clock will stop for first downs inside 2 minutes of the second and fourth quarters. The penalty for defensive pass interference is going to mirror the NCAA rule with exceptions. First, a defender intentionally tackling a receiver beyond 15 yards, that would be a spot foul. Penalty would be a spot foul if it occurs 15 yards or less, or a 15-yard penalty from if the spot foul is beyond 15 yards. If a pass does not cross the line of scrimmage, there can be no pass interference or ineligible player downfield penalties. That's the rules now, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, that's the rules in the new USFL. Indy Hawk doesn't think I'm not sure. He says not likely unless down 3. What about the T. Bodie mentioned the famous tennis player Nadal with heart issues similar to myocarditis, but something else. The number one player in women's tennis, Ash Barty, has retired. Out of the blue, Ash Barty just retired. Don't know the scenario. I mean, she's been dating a guy for a couple of years. She basically said she's done with it. She retired before after junior play, where she retired for a couple of years and then came back. But this looks like at the age of 25, Barty is retiring from tennis. World number one. World number one, and she's retiring. I mean, that's, you know, going out on top. She said she's ready. She's happy. She just knows at the moment in her heart, this is the right time. I mean, good for her, you know. I can't imagine that she's hurting for cash. Yeah, she's been dating Gary Kisik, who's a trainee golf professional, since 2016. They got engaged last November. So, yeah, it's not the first time she's walked away. She was a Wimbledon junior champ at age 15 and then left the tour for nearly 2 years in 2014 because of burnout. Played professional cricket for a while back in Australia where she's from. Interesting. So, yeah, that's another surprise today in the sports side of thing. T. Bodie doesn't like the football changes except for targeting levels. Holger is in the house. Holger, T. Bodie, and Indy all in the house. So, yeah, so that's interesting stuff in the sports world. We got some interesting trades and free agent signings in the NFL. Miami Dolphins have acquired Kansas City Chiefs running back Tyreek Hill for 5 draft picks, a first, second, and fourth round pick for this year, and a fourth and fifth round pick for next year's draft. The Atlanta Falcons traded 14-year veteran franchise quarterback Matt Ryan to the Indianapolis Colts for a third round pick. And then they also signed 2014 Heisman Trophy winner quarterback Marcus Mariota as a free agent. And they worked on getting Deshaun Watson before he ended up with the Browns in Cleveland. And, of course, the usual head-scratcher type move, the Super Bowl losing Cincinnati Bengals, signed, and then after an hour waived, reserve offensive tackle Fred Johnson. Yeah, interesting stuff there. We'll get back to more sports later. Brother Tommy's in the house. Hawkeye Mike's in for a little political commentary. Here's one. I want to read this article or this editorial by Peter Roff of American Liberty News, R-O-F-F. He calls it the Roff Draft. This is titled The Congressional Carbuncle, and it's about Taylor Greene and others like her who, although, you know, they espouse conservative views, they tend to overinflate their value to Congress and, frankly, to America. Interesting. I mean, I normally am on the side of Marjorie Taylor Greene, but here's what he said. He said, as it's on the brink of retaking power in Congress, the conservative coalition needs to start asking tough questions about what it stands for and how it operates. It also needs to consider the easy ones, like what is and what is not acceptable and in which direction it wants to train its fire. The introspection is necessary because of people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who represents Georgia's 14th congressional district and is so undisciplined in the political sense that when she launches barbs at progressives, she inevitably hits a few nominal ideological allies standing in between where she is on the fringe and where they, the liberals, are. Ronald Reagan used to say something about a person who is with him 80% of the time not being his 20% enemy. It was a wise description, not just of political reality, but of the way successful conservative politicians operate. Unlike the Democrats, who are a collection of interest groups that support one another in their efforts to divide the pie, the Gipper led a Republican Party that understood the need to assemble enough votes to win. That meant, as it often did in those days, the GOP needed to court members of the other party as they strolled down the pathway to victory. In the decades since, the parties like the electorate have grown more polarized. This may be an argument for a strong backbone, but it isn't an excuse for a big mouth. Green, who can't seem to say good morning without causing controversy, seems to believe this is a good way to advance conservative views. Believe me, it's not. It's not just that she goes out of her way to be provocative. That's sometimes necessary, as Newt Gingrich showed while waking the GOP House conference up from a 40-year sleep. But provocation without purpose is unhelpful, especially for the other Republicans who are often called upon to respond to what she's said or done. The latest outrage was her vote Thursday when she, as one of only 7 other members of the House who did, voted against suspending normal U.S. trade relations with Russia and Belarus following their unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. To her, it seems, America has more important issues to deal with, as she said later in a video posted online. She said, if we truly care about suffering and death on our television screens, we cannot fund more of it by sending money and weaponry to Ukraine to fight a war they cannot possibly win, she said. The only effect, more arms and more money from America, will be to prolong the war and magnify human suffering. She may think what she wants, but they conflict with the facts. The brave freedom fighters in Ukraine are holding on better than anyone expected. The Russian army is performing like something sent by the Tsar rather than as a military force composed of super machines and supermen the world feared during the Soviet era. If she cannot see that Ukraine's fight is America's fight, at least so far as when President Volodymyr Zelensky told Congress the invasion was, quote, a brutal offensive against our values and, quote, against our right to live freely in our own country, just like the same dreams you have, you Americans, just like anyone else in the United States, unquote, and she has missed the whole point about what it means to stand for freedom and self-government. There have been other incidents as well, too many, in fact, to contain them all in a single column that is still of readable length. The Democrats were wrong when they voted to strip her of her committee assignments over things she had said before being elected to Congress. But that doesn't make her a hero. Instead, it gave her more time to make mischief, leading her to become a congressional carbuncle, better known for the irritation she has caused than for anything she might have accomplished. Rather than being the brave and lonely warrior standing for values like freedom against the machinations of the deep state, she likes to portray herself as being, she has become an embarrassment as well as an impediment to the conservative cause. There is a profound difference, as House Majority Leader Dick Armey, Republican Texas, explains in his newly released memoir, Leader, between being a person of stature and a person of status. Green no doubt thinks she is the former, when she is most obviously the latter. She has what a journalist friend of mine likes to describe as being an adult form of ADD. She can't stand it when people don't pay attention to her. If she's serious about extending liberty and protecting freedom, she needs to start being serious about the business of legislating, of offering concrete ideas in the form of legislation that will reduce the burden and reach of the federal government, enhance personal freedom, make the nation stronger, and allow us as a nation to proceed forward into the 21st century with our national head held high. If all she wants is attention, she should resign from Congress to start a podcast, get in the radio business, or persuade someone to back her in launching a television show. That way she'll get the kind of influence she wants and has, while someone who is interested in doing a job as a member of Congress is supposed to, can have her seat. Brilliant. Right on target. It's true. Look, I'm not unsupportive of her mission, so to speak, but Peter Roth is right. She, in a sense, she can become a conservative AOC. At a certain point, you start to sound stupid. Okay, this was inserted into my show outline, and it says, I want to give the hugest shout-out to the most amazing woman in my life, Mrs. Hank, by this show. Okay, so according to another article in American Liberty, the GOP could supposedly use Senate Rule 26 to put a stop to the nomination of Ketanji Brown Jackson, a.k.a. KBJ, to the Supreme Court vacancy being created by the retirement of Justice Stephen Breyer when the current session ends. Now, that's projected to be in May or June. Patrick Houck says, goes on to say, basically how it would be done is not showing up in committee for a quorum. Quorum is required to get the vote, to get it out of committee. And they, you know, if Republicans weren't to show up, that could possibly, you know, create a problem. I don't know where to go with that. So I've got someone coming on. Let's introduce him.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could find another kind of mind there. Ooh. Then I suddenly see you, ooh. Did I tell you I need you every single day of my life?
Mike, you there? Mike, are you there? Oh my gosh, he's showing there. He's showing with his hand up, but I don't hear him. Well, Mike was coming on to talk about, my thing's okay. Let me message him here and see if he's there. He should be. Here, let me just message him because Mike is coming on to talk about this. Rule 26. Let me send him. Mike, trying to get you on. Is he there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that.
Okay, there you,
I had it on
there you go. Okay. Gosh, I played your song for you.
I was so enthralled by that version of Got to Get You Into My Life. You know, I just got froze there for a minute. You know, it's almost as good as William Shatner's version of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
No.
I'm not sure which one I like.
I think I got to go with this one. So, okay, I assume you've watched some of the hearings of Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Yeah, a little bit.
Aside from a lot of double talk, what's your general impression?
you know, look, this is sort of all sort of a game. You know, everybody knows pretty much how they're going to vote, I think, and there, with a few exceptions, you know, like the you know, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski's of the world may generally, you know, and maybe Mitt Romney haven't figured it out yet. But everybody else, you know, whether you're Democrat or Republican, they know what they're going to do here. So there's some point scoring going on. It's conceivable that if some sort of bomb, you know, some real, you know, nuclear bomb sort of exploded about her, that that could change things. But I haven't seen that.
What's your impression of her,
and that's coming up.
Yeah, but I mean, like she said
She's a well-spoken, intelligent liberal. You know, that's just the way she is. But there were a couple things that they kind of, I think, got her on a little bit that kind of expose her for the real liberal that I think she'll be when she's on the court. Her inability to define what a woman is. Or I shouldn't say her inability, her unwillingness to do that. Says a lot. And they've really been raking her over the coals on this issue of her sentencing of particularly convicted child molesters, you know, basically. I don't know all the background on this, but apparently she's departed from the sentencing guidelines in some instances where some people that did some pretty bad stuff got pretty light sentences. And, you know, it's all part of a attempt to try to say, hey, look, you know, this woman's pro-defendant and, you know, the typical liberal doesn't want to believe in punishment. I don't know whether that stuff's going to be a game changer. I think the bottom line is I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe that there's been any minds changed. And I think the Democrats probably have the votes to put her through. I think also you have to, if you're from the Republican point of view, the conservative point of view, you have to, you know, is this a hill you want to die on?
Yeah.
You're talking about a liberal replacing a liberal. If she was replacing Clarence Thomas, I think it would be a whole different ball game, and there really would be, you know, it would be a lot more contentious. But I would also point out that you see how the Republicans, although they asked her tough questions, have treated her pretty much with respect. I haven't heard any questions about her sex life when she was in college or high school. None of this kind of dirt. None of this dirt's coming up. And for some of the Democrats or some of the press to be, you know, all indignant about some of the questioning they get when they were cheerleading when Kavanaugh was up, and even the way Amy Coney Barrett was treated, it's just hypocrisy beyond belief.
Yeah, you know, somebody was going after her today. I don't remember who it was, and they were basically saying, I guess you'd say her record on defending somebody. She was a public, you know, a federal defender for some defendants at Gitmo detainees. And in the case, you know, someone was going after about two of them who she continued to she continued to openly defend when she went to her private practice. And at the, you know, and that Gitmo defendant happened to become a defendant or a client of that practice at the same time. And this person said, wow, you know, that is quite a coincidence. And then she wouldn't really come clean on the other defendant that it was being asked about. And I don't know their names. I mean, I sort of heard them, but you know, I'm not sure if that's just posturing or if it's, you know, I don't know. The Babylon Bee had a really good joke quote. They said, she defends a murderer stating, your life shouldn't be ruined by something you only did for 15 minutes. Now, that's kind of hilarious and all, but is that really accurate? I mean, is it fair to characterize her that way? I mean, if she's a federal defender, she is entrusted with doing a job, you know? Is it fair to go after her that way?
I don't really have a problem with that, you know. I think that it, in our system, everyone is entitled to have, you know, good defense, have a good lawyer, and so I mean, I don't know enough about the specifics of what she did, and I haven't been able to hear all the hearings, so I don't know if she did anything particularly egregious here, other than defend these. I mean, these are loathsome individuals, right? And by the way, the problem is not the fact that she defended him. The problem is that the primarily the Obama administration, and I also blame a little bit the Bush administration because they dragged their heels on this. These people should have been brought in front of military tribunals 15 to 20 years ago, after they were first brought in. And there was a push, usually among a bunch of liberals, and Bush kind of caved on it to not go forward with that. And eventually it got to the point when Obama came in, we're just getting rid of all these military tribunals. We'll try them normally in the civilian court system. The problem is most of these people haven't gone to trial yet. That Ramzi Youssef and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, they're still waiting to go to trial.
So
I think the problem here is the way our overall system's working. But I think, like Lindsey Graham said, I hope these guys just rot in prison. There should be no attempt to they're in prison right now. So in some ways, if nothing happens, they're not going anywhere. But
right.
A lot of these people during the Obama administration, and we'll see if Biden starts doing this too, were released. And in fact, if you look at the cast of characters now staffing the highest positions in government over in Afghanistan after we turned tail and ran last year, those Taliban people, a lot of them are former detainees at Gitmo. These people don't reform. They're going back, and they're just going to start doing the same stuff they were doing. And why on earth we released them? Because some lefties' conscience was shocked that they were being kept in prison for a while, or because they thought maybe if we release them, we can get the Taliban to be nice and deal with it. I don't know what it's sort of head-scratching, just like what Biden's trying to do with Iran right now and resurrect that stupid deal, which my understanding is this thing is going to be even worse. And we're using the Russians as intermediaries.
Yeah, exactly.
It's insane. This president we have, I'm sorry, I don't like to get on this, is an absolute disgrace to the office.
Biden, he is.
They're going to be taught a lesson in November, I think, and that'll be good. But we've got, 2.5, almost 3 years of this guy left.
Yeah.
And the scary thing is you don't really want to get him out because the alternative is going to be even worse. That cackling, caterwauling we have for a vice president.
So who's
completely incompetent. So we're really I think I heard Hannity or somebody just said basically we're screwed for the next 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, and what are we supposed to do, I mean, that's the scary part. What are we supposed to do? So I don't know. Explain Senate Rule 26. What is that, and how does it work?
Well, yeah, my understanding of this is that Rule 26 it's a standing rules of the Senate, requires that nominees such as the Supreme Court nominee here, Judge Jackson, has to be reported out of the committee by a she can be reported out even if she has – this is interesting. She can be reported out of the committee even if the committee was to vote to not recommend her approval. The problem is, in order to get her out of committee and get her to the Senate, there has to be a quorum of present when they vote. And so this isn't relevant most of the time, but when you have a 50-50 Senate and when you have all of the committees, as the Judiciary Committee is, equally divided, if one party was to just not show up, they wouldn't have a quorum and they couldn't conduct business. And if they can't get her out of committee for that reason, my understanding is they can't get her to the Senate for a floor vote to get her approved. So that's there's this technicality you have when you have an evenly split, and this has been used a couple times on some other nominees that are lesser known. who are, by the way, disastrous people. But, yeah, it has been used. My understanding is that they've used this a couple times. But I think you have to be – the thing is you have to be – you don't want to be doing this all the time. Now, the problem is that this isn't like the filibuster where, you know, theoretically you get 51 votes like they could have done with if Manchin and Sinema had gone along.
Right.
This is a standing – this is part of the standing rules of the Senate. And in order to change those rules, you have to have a two-thirds vote. So there would have to be a substantial number of Republicans willing to do that. Now, if they do this, if they were to do this all the time to prevent any nominees coming out of committee, I think that the pressure would be that this obstruction's ridiculous. I think you have to pick and choose. Do you want to use it here? Again, if she was replacing Clarence Thomas, I think I'd probably be all for it because that would really change the balance of the court, you know, or some other conservative. But in a situation where she's replaced, you know, because if you block her, he's not going to appoint anybody that's going to be much different. In this case, she's replacing a liberal with a liberal, and there's only three of them. Yeah, you can talk about whether Roberts, but anyway, there's only three clear liberals. Do you really want – is this, like I said, is this a hill you want to die on? I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I think you have to be a little bit judicious in using that sort of – that's a real –
I mean, and frankly, I'm surprised they haven't used it – the Dems haven't used it before, but, you know, that's –
They would have, but they couldn't. They couldn't do it with Amy Coney Barrett because the Republicans had a majority on the committee.
So the quorum was there, even if all the Democrats,
you know, it was like 11-9. So if the nine Democrats don't show up, doesn't matter. You've got a quorum. Here it's 10-10. So if 10, you have to have a majority to have a quorum. They don't have it.
Yeah. Well, but one problem, Holger in the chat room mentioned one problem with her, if she's made to the court, she's so young. I mean, she'll be there for four. He says she'll be there for 40 years. That's a scary proposition, of course.
Yeah.
That's one, you know, frightening thing about it. Hey, one other item before we go to break. January 6th, we had another January 6th trial. Coy Griffin, a New Mexico supporter of President Trump, he was found guilty of one charge and acquitted of the other by a federal judge in D.C. He was found guilty of illegally entering restricted U.S. Capitol grounds, but acquitted of engaging in disorderly conduct. The judge said, by virtue of climbing over three walls, either with assistance or use of a ladder, he had to know he was on restricted grounds, but he also appeared to be attempting to calm people down, not riling them up, and he never actually entered the U.S. Capitol building. So he opted for a bench trial, and because he said he didn't expect a jury of his peers, peers in quotes, in the in D.C. So you think we're going to start seeing these cases start coming through now, or do you think we're still going to just see a trickle?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to gauge. I do think as time goes by, you're going to see more and more of these people coming to trial just as a matter of course, or they get plea deals. But I think the problem there is then the government has been just trying to just nail them to the wall. They haven't been giving them very good deals, which means, you know, why not go to trial, right? But there's political reasons, obviously, for that. I think, well, like this case that you're just talking about, I don't know what the sentencing possibilities are for a conviction. What was it, criminal trespass, basically? And was acquitted on the disorderly conduct. But my hunch is that criminal trespass sentence is probably that he was convicted of, but probably a lot less than if he'd got the disorderly conduct, which is probably one step below, like, inciting a riot or something like that. So
I don't know if he's been in jail the whole time or if he
is. I think he has. They have not been giving these guys bail. They have not been giving these guys bail. You know, you can go out and murder somebody and they'll give you bail. But these guys have most, for the most part, from what I understand, have not been getting bail.
Right. So he's,
and
he said
the court,
he's
going to
so
their
if
shame the, have been
the,
going
the,
along with it.
And it says that the sentence he could be facing a year. Well, he's been in jail for a year, so he's – or
well,
maybe not.
He will
not.
Get credit for time served. You know, he will get credit for time served.
I don't know when he started serving. I mean, he might not have been caught right away. I don't know. Or identified or whatever right away. So who knows for that. So
anyway. So, okay, I just wanted to, you know, see. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but stay on the line because then afterwards Brother Tommy's coming on. We're going to talk March Madness. I'm going to let him rant a bit,
okay.
But I would love to hear – I'd love your input
really,
as well.
It's really
so.
Been madness, right?
Yeah, it has. It absolutely has. But, yeah, for our break is also going to serve as an intro for our next guest. So be back in about 3 minutes, folks.
That's good. I'm just going to make a drink now.
This is TJ, dedicating the song to Let Betty. Whoa, Black Betty, Bama Lamb. Whoa, Black Betty, Bama Lamb. She's from Birmingham. Bama Lamb, way down in Alabama. Bama Lamb, the way she shake that thing.
Shake.
Bama Lamb, boy, she make me sing. Bama Lamb, whoa, Black Betty.
Yeah.
Bama Lamb, whoa, Black Betty. Bama Lamb, she really get me high.
Hey.
Bama Lamb, you know that's no lie. Bama Lamb, she's so rock steady.
Yeah.
Bama Lamb, but she's always ready.
Always.
Bama Lamb, whoa, Black Betty. 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 Bama Lamb.
Tom Jones with his version of Black Betty, which is also serving as an intro to our next guest who's in with Mike, Brother Tommy. Man, did I promise you good tunes?
You did.
I delivered.
Movie line.
So let's just get this out of the way, this first part. Do you have any explanation for what happened to Iowa last Thursday?
Absolutely.
I mean, other than disgust.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to get around that.
Yeah, we got. I'm,
go ahead,
I felt
Tom.
Like it is.
Ahead,
I think
Tom.
I've been saying it all year. We've got a mediocre coach, and I'll tell you what. Mediocrity is most reflected in his arrogance, and I'll show you what I mean by that. You go through high school and daddy ball like I did with kids and AAU and all of that. The coaches that favor their kids, they've all got one unique characteristic. They're all arrogant as fuck. Fran McCaffrey is. He's arrogant. And it reflects in the way he plays his kids. It reflects in his post-game, what I heard someone tell me, that he said, next year, my son is going to really, really shine. Wait till you see my son next year. There are several times on the court in Division I basketball that 40% of the people on the court at one time were his children. It's disgusting. I think he's an absolute mess, so I see no excuse for it. I give Bluter a little bit of a pass. She's been there, because I'm assuming you're inquiring about the female, too.
Yeah.
A little bit of a pass. She went the Elite Eight, what, 3-4 years ago, 19 or thereabouts, 2019. But she is at home and 2 versus 10, and then it goes to me. Unfortunately, it's a reflection on Iowa. You don't get fired at Iowa. Both of those coaches have been over there 10 years. They know they're not going to get fired, and I just don't think they see urgency. But, no, I'll echo Hawkeye Mind. Disgusting. But it's a result of arrogance, and so I think he's a dim-witted coach, personally. Everyone was talking him up at the end of the year, just like I think on one of our group chats, everyone was saying, Connor's going to start shooting now because he got hot. No, he's not. I know how shooters react, and he didn't, and I do not blame Connor. In fact, I thought he assumed his role pretty well towards the end of the season, and you know I've been hard on him all year. But I know he wouldn't shoot well, and I knew that the coach wouldn't change his stripes.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think? What were your thoughts on that?
Leaving aside McCaffrey for a second, Tom, are you saying you think Bluter should go, that she's past her sell-by date?
2000, she's been to one Elite Eight. I'm not down on Bluter. I'll tell you what, we'll put in academia parlance. Fran definitely gets an F. Fran's the coach of the men's basketball team. Lisa, coach of the women's basketball team, gets a D-, but at least she passes because she can at least hang her hat on an Elite Eight, which Fran can't do. And he's had several chances with teams. I don't give a shit. Give me a Sweet 16 when you're supposed to be there. I know. I think he made the Sweet 16 once. Maybe.
He's never been to the Sweet 16. Not with any coach.
He's never gone beyond second round at Iowa. Yeah,
right. That's what I thought. I wasn't sure.
Iowa was in the Sweet 16 was 1999. Tom Davis.
Yep. No. I certainly don't give him a pass. He's going to get a pass. But Bluter, I'm a little bit more tolerant of. But there again, it's because of the fact that I follow men's. I really don't follow women's. The only reason I did was Caitlin Clark, who to me is just an amazing human being to watch on the basketball court. I watched her at the end of the season. I told Hank when I talked to him earlier, it's actually a better one. I said she's Pete Maravich, but who she is more so is Stephon Curry. She can throw the ball up from 30 feet with the most limited effort, and boom, three-pointer. She is phenomenal. I don't like watching women's basketball. If that makes me a misogynist, so be it. I don't like it. I like watching men's basketball. But she made – Gustafson kind of did it the other year because we knew she was going to get Player of the Year. And I hope Caitlin Clark does too. But she makes women's basketball very, very exciting to me.
I'd go back to say more. She's actually more like Pete Maravich in that she's also. I mean, she leads the nation in scoring and in assists. You know, I mean,
right. But her most demonstrative stuff that she does on the court is Stephon Curry like. But she is Pete Maravich. She's a great passer. Pete Maravich can be accused of a lot of things, but he can't be accused of being an unselfish ball player.
Have you listened to her
be interviewed? She's sharp as a tack, very articulate.
My wife and I were listening to her. Very, very, yes, I couldn't agree more. Very bright. And there again, I don't know enough about Bluter. It seems like you're ready to, we all know with Gary Barta, our athletic director, nothing's going to happen. You don't fire a coach, period. They're going to have to rape 19 kids and have unequivocal proof, and the boosters say do it, he'll do it. But he's a straw man. But that's a different story. But I don't know enough about women's Hawkeye Mike to make a definitive statement on Bluter. I think she's appears
okay,
to be
I
a good.
I thought you were trying to lump her in with maybe like McCaffrey.
No, just really more. Just I think we were just talking more of the fact that being number 2 seed on your home court and losing to a 10, that's just...
Oh, what I did was I literally pulled it up because I didn't watch the first game. I literally pulled it up and say, okay, it's got to be that time. Iowa basketball just destroyed, men's basketball just destroyed my will to live. Oh, you still got the women's, and I have to hold it up. And I did it verbally, and I'm like, Iowa women's basketball. And then they're like, Iowa women's basketball lost to Creighton 64-62. And I'm like, holy shit. I didn't even know they were playing at home. And
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
2 seed versus a 10 seed, there's no excuse for it. But because
no.
I haven't followed it, I'm not qualified to say if she gets another pass for a year or even a decade. I don't know with the women's. But I will say 20 years and you've only been to one Elite Eight. Boy, don't we rue the day for marching Tom Davis out of town. And I'll tell you what, I was one of the ones that said,
yeah,
let's
no
do
kidding.
It, because I thought when we lost to UNLV. But, you know, so shame on me. Maybe we lose McCaffrey and we go in the dumpster. I don't know, but I think it's inexcusable. I hate nepotism. You guys have heard me bitch about the nepotism in the football program with coach to coach. Basketball program, it's coach to players, plural. Well, not anymore. I'm thinking Connor's going to leave. I don't know if he's got a COVID year or not. But,
he does,
yeah,
he does
but,
have
know,
a COVID
he does
year.
No, he can come back. And the point is he's not. He doesn't have an NBA or you know, pro future.
No, he doesn't.
So why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he?
Right. So he pulls the ball hand in. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Bo
I mean,
Hannon
and,
would come back if he could.
You know, oh, God. He'd do 16 years for a long stretch.
No, he can't. He's spent now, which is probably a good thing. But, you know, to my view then on McCaffrey, I don't disagree with a lot of what you're saying. I think as a practical matter, he's not in danger of losing his job. So that's not going to happen.
Not at
but
all. That's not going to happen.
Not, actually, to me, this was so, so damn disappointing. I was so pissed. If this team laid an egg like they did against
Richmond,
who, by the way, got destroyed by Providence, you know,
25 points.
So,
and let me tell you guys
something
real
like,
quick,
and,
Mike.
And Iowa, you know, I don't understand. Here's the thing, though. Iowa, this team, you know, last year's team, if you recall, they were kind of going down a little bit going into the tournament. So when they lost to Oregon, as bad as that was, it wasn't quite as shocking to me because there was something about them at the end of the year. They just weren't quite getting it done. This team was on real trajectory going upward.
Yeah.
And
well,
I'm
you're in good
Vitale
company.
The funny thing was his championship game was Kentucky, who went out in the first round against Iowa.
I got another one for you guys.
Do worse.
I got another one for you guys. And it all, I said the arrogance manifests itself, the arrogance of the head coach in several ways, one of which is we don't play defense and we're not a disciplined team. I saw today on a Hawkeye Report someone had a thing. They were interviewing the Villanova coach. And one of the reporters said, you guys, or I think it was the reporter, but anyways, Villanova is Iowa with discipline. In other words, they've got the same talent, you know, talent level, but at least they're disciplined. And that's what we showed we're not. I didn't see the game. My wife filled me in. We looked like deer in headlights. And I told her, well, I told you this was going to happen anyways. You know, I don't know if you guys know this. Richmond, about three of their victories, they wouldn't be in the tournament. Richmond, about three or four of their victories, I was reading before we played them, were against teams that they upset, but the teams that they beat were COVID-stricken. Like two or three of the main players were out. So everyone thought this was going to be a walk in the park.
Yep.
All right.
Well,
so, yeah.
Here's my criticism of McCaffrey. Now, you want me to go along, which I do. And I didn't have this till they blew that game against Richmond. How do you play so, you know, and this is what I put on McCaffrey, Fran, as a coach. And I don't, you know, it kind of makes me done with him, is – you get these guys inspired to play, and they play inspired basketball, you know, the last basically half of the season, and then in the tournament and win the tournament, the conference tournament, and then they show up. They show up like a bunch of empty suits against Richmond, like they were not motivated to play. How can you not get them, especially given what had just happened, inspired to play in the NCAA tournament? And they came out flat as hell. I mean, and I put that on the coach. He's got to get him ready to play.
Put that on the coach.
What the hell is going on? How
well,
can
you
they
guys was arguably,
how can they lay an egg like that?
Well,
they
I'm telling you what
didn't care. They thought they could just show up and win. Well, they found out you can't in the NCAA.
One difference.
That's what
you
pissed me off so much.
And I agree. And one difference you can make with teams that are 5-16, we were 5, is you got the all-world guy, ride him. And he is not going to get it, but Keegan Murray deserves to be player of the year, Naismith player of the year. He deserves to be. But you don't, at least the first round, lose when you have a guy that is that talented. And I'm just agreeing with you. I couldn't explain it.
To these guys?
Well,
I'll tell you exactly what happened.
I'll tell you exactly what happened, guys. One, the
it'll be wrong,
we,
but he'll tell
us. No. I'm saying the excuse that we were tired and had the 4 games in 4 days. So did Richmond. Richmond had the same thing.
So did Richmond. Number one. Look at number two.
So that washes. So no, look at the next one. The next one is we just weren't up for it. Well, then that goes right back to the coach, like you guys have said.
But here's number three.
He has one job. He has to have them ready to play. That's all he has to do.
Let's not excuse the players. I mean, they would get deficits of 6 to 8 points. They would come back, close it to 2, and then literally, thinking that they had it in the bag, they'd get down, and on the very next possession, they'd give up a backdoor cut. I mean, after having already given up the
inbounds were disgusting.
The two dumbest things I hear people say is, number one, well, the coach isn't taking the 3-point shot. No, but he is a reflection as to who is. Maybe you got the wrong person in there, number one. And the number two, as you take a look at University of Illinois, they thought the same thing last year. Oh, they shot their wad. They went all the way through the Big Ten tournament. Oh, this year, they're glad to be out on the first round. Guess what? They barely won their first game. They're out their second game. So whenever I hear people say, well, they played too long in the tournament, that's bullshit. One extra game, 2 extra games for 18-year-old guys who are more cardiovascular fit basketball players than anyone in the world. You're telling me that one extra game really cost them. Biggest fucking top out in the world. And you're right, Hank. Richmond played the same amount of games. Well, in fact, Richmond might have played one more game. I don't know if they had it.
No, they had 4. They had 4 in 4 days as well.
Okay.
They had 4 in 4 days.
Yeah.
Unless you want to play like their tournament was over like a couple hours before ours was, but I think we can pretty much eschew that stupid.
Well, look,
okay, so now
you know they played 4 in a row, but Iowa was operating on 4 days rest after that. So I don't want to hear this like they were spent. They just were not ready to play, and it's completely unacceptable to me to have them, you know, basically just show up and flat like that.
After I agree
100%. What they've done and the talent they have, and McCaffrey had one job, and that was to get them ready to play. And, you know, it's like this just shows you how irrelevant conference tournaments really are. The NCAA is what matters. And if you're not ready, I don't care how well you're playing. If you don't show up for the NCAA, you know, who cares?
Well, I told my buddy, because I recognized the team for what it was, I told him, he's a University of Illinois fan, I told him, I want to win the Big Ten tournament. I'll even buy into the hype that you're going to be more worn out for the tournament. That's bullshit. But I'll even play that game. I knew with this coach, because history does tend to repeat itself, we weren't going to go any further. And so I'm like, hey, let's get a Big Ten champion, tournament champions banner in our Carver Hawkeye, because – we're certainly not going to go to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, because, you know, a coach, Kentucky, okay, he's proven himself. Okay, that's a fluke. But Fran hasn't even gotten there. You know, who's Kentucky? Yeah. Calipari, you know, okay, it's like, all right, he's gotten there. Ah, that's one of those things any given day. But when it happens against Oregon, when it happens here, Northwestern State's on offer, I'm just saying, it just happens too much.
Yeah.
All right, I'm done ranting
about
that.
No, I mean, it's totally unacceptable that we can't get in his 12 years, 12 seasons, and 6-7 teams in the NCAAs, we can't get past the second round. I mean, what the hell is going on?
Up until last year, he had never made it to Saturday of the Big Ten tournament. And the only reason he made it to Saturday last year is because he didn't play his first game until Friday. So, I mean, that was,
And then you have insult to injury added on here. Because you see Iowa State, who won a grand total of 2 games last year, they're in the Sweet 16.
Yep.
I think he's a first-year coach. I can't even say his name.
Octoberger is a better coach than McCaffrey. You got to give the guy credit. I mean,
Two wins, one year to Sweet 16. That's almost mathematically impossible. Whatever he did. I'd love to know what he's putting in his players' breakfast because, no, that's his.
But
and you know
to,
what? I'm
to
not
say,
listening
so
to the Iowa
to
guys say that we're
beat,
Iowa State.
I have to say I was so great to watch Iowa State beat Wisconsin. I can't stand Brad Davidson. There's something about that guy that I think I want to go out. I want to take him out in the back and just beat the crap out of him. I don't know what
it is. It's called penis protection. Every male wants to protect their penis. That's what it's called with that guy. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The guy wants to hit guys.
I'm not sure I'm following
he's creepy. Yeah, he's creepy. He's definitely. Okay,
he's
so guys.
Mike, he's the one that always bangs the guy's package.
Yeah. So,
Go back to conference tournaments, though.
You mentioned, you know, are they worthwhile? I mean, look at Michigan, who is in the Sweet 16 as an 11 seed, lost on the first day of the tournament, got in at 17-14, and last week we were actually saying anybody have a problem with them being in. I mean, Rutgers probably Rutgers probably solidified their and Indiana both probably solidified getting in the tournament by their wins in the Big Ten tournament. So, you know, there's an argument for it, maybe. I don't know across the board.
Well, let me tell you this. What you're bringing up is the dichotomy between Fran McCaffrey and Juwan Howard. Say what you want. And if I was on your show last week, I would be the first to admit it. I would say they don't deserve to be there. Number one. Number two, they're going out first round. But some coaches know how to prepare their teams for the NCAA tournament. Say what you want about Howard, and I hate the motherfucker. But he gets the job done.
Yeah, he does. Okay, so the 16 teams left, three or four of them are double-digit seeds. Let's see, Iowa State, Michigan, who else?
By the way, the thing about Iowa State, too, now they're in the Sweet 16, they're playing the 10 seed who upset Auburn, so they actually have a pretty good shot getting to the elite.
Yeah, Miami and St. Pete. Miami and St. Peter.
I've actually got them beating Miami, Mike, and losing to Kansas
for a Final Four spot.
No. Losing to Kansas.
Likely.
Right. Kansas beats Providence, and
you know what? They lost in overtime at Kansas this year, so I wouldn't just dismiss that either.
Yeah.
I think there is going to be an element of, and we'll talk about St. Peter, I'm sure, but there's going to be, I'll do the punny word game, the Peter principle with Iowa State. Kansas is there year after year after year. Iowa State, it's going to catch up to them. And there's no shame if they beat Miami to losing to Kansas. Don't get me wrong, but it's going
to
catch up.
It's a miracle to get to the Elite Eight.
Ah,
yeah.
They did everything.
To Kansas.
Okay,
and I hate the Iowa fans that say they're little brother. No, they're not. Let's man up. They're certainly not in basketball.
Well, they usually are. But this is an exception. On football, they are, definitely. They can't – even when they think they're going to win, they get their ass kicked.
Yeah, but you go down to 2002, and that whole story changes. We would have been number one in the country. But, all right, that's a different story.
Well, right.
So we're at the Sweet 16. We'll go through individual games real quick. Gonzaga, Arkansas, Brother Tommy, who do you think?
I got Arkansas. One of my many upsets you'll hear. Arkansas.
Mike?
Well, that's a hell of a matchup, really. I mean, Arkansas is tough, and I think Gonzaga is beatable. You know what? I'm going to go with Tom on this. I'm going to pick Arkansas.
Okay. Texas Tech Duke. Mike,
another
you go
one
first.
Of my upsets. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mike, go ahead.
You know what? Krzyzewski's going to, you know, this is it for him. Duke's going to win.
Yeah. Tommy, you think Texas Tech?
All my soliloquy earlier would say I would go with Krzyzewski because I think he is obviously a Final Four coach. But, yes, that's going to be another upset of mine, Texas Tech.
Okay.
But Mike's right. It is Krzyzewski.
Okay. Tommy, you first on this one, North Carolina, UCLA.
UCLA, but I think it's going to be a close game.
Mike, how about you?
Yeah, a good game, but UCLA showed me something when they I can't remember who they beat by.
St. Mary's,
who beat Indiana by 30, and then UCLA just trounces them. I'm going with UCLA.
Okay, now, Mike, you first on this one. Purdue against the darling right now of the tournament, St. Peter's.
You know, maybe it's trying to be a Big Ten guy here, but I think St. Peter's is they're getting to where they're running out of their nine lives. Purdue beats them.
Okay, Tommy.
Yeah, reiterate my Peter Principle joke earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
I think their Peter Principle is Purdue.
Yeah. Okay. Tommy, you first. Arizona, Houston. I already know how you're going on this one.
Yeah, you know who I've got winning it all, although I won't be shocked, but I'm going to go with Arizona.
Mike, how about you?
Well, you know, Houston's playing good. It's going to be a tough game, but I do think, I kind of agree that Arizona's the pick, I think, to win it all. I'm going with Arizona.
How about
Michigan?
Yeah,
that's who I have winning it all, too.
Mike, for you, how about Michigan and Villanova?
Oh, man. You know, there's something about Michigan with, whatever you think of Howard, he's going to have them ready. I think Michigan's going to win.
Tommy.
I'm going disciplined Iowa team. They've been there. They're almost there every year. I'm going Villanova.
That's a close pick. You know, I won't be surprised.
It is a very close.
Yeah.
All of these games are close except the St. Peter game, which is Purdue's going to beat them by 20-plus. All of these games are close besides that. Yeah, I think so, but we'll see.
Tommy, you're up on this one. Kansas, Providence.
Kansas.
Really? Mike, how about
Kansas.
You?
Yeah.
Providence is I always thought that was going to be a tough game for Iowa, and they beat the hell out of Richmond, which, you know, puts Iowa to shame even more. This is going to be a tough game for Kansas. I'm going to go with the upset. I'm going to pick Providence.
Okay, then you're first up on Iowa State, Miami.
You know what? The magic continues. Iowa State wins.
Tommy.
Iowa State. I agree.
Really?
Although Miami's been rather magical, but no, I agree with Iowa State. And there again.
And that nice one over Auburn.
So, I mean, neither one's going to shock me, but Hawkeye Mike and I have talked about it before. I'm a little bit homerish here. When it's not Iowa, I root for Iowa State. That's just my nature. I don't know why I'm supposed to hate them, but I don't.
I do, too. Most Hawkeye fans do.
Let me ask you, if Iowa State does win, does Otzelberger have a good shot at Coach of the Year?
He should.
I mean, it's
a
hell of a turnaround from 2-22.
If Iowa State doesn't win, I think short of the St. Peter's
coach, like a miracle,
which ain't gonna happen. Yeah, I think he's a lot. Let me rephrase that. I think he should be a lot for Coach of the Year. I don't know the political. I know what you're talking about. Political ramifications.
If Duke wins and gets to the Elite Eight, let alone the Final Four,
right,
which they could.
That's
going to be hard not to pick Krzyzewski because he's sentimental. It's a sentimental choice. Otherwise,
that's it, and that's what I'm saying. Short of that, but guess what? A 2 seed, guess what? They're supposed to. An 11 seed is not supposed to. I'm saying
that doesn't mean they won't pick him, though.
Iowa State is deserving. The coach, Oxenberg, or whatever his name is deserving of it. I'm not saying he's going to win. Yeah. I'm not saying he's going to win it. And the Miami coach is actually right there. To me, it would be that game, coincidentally, to me, would be the best coach of the coach of the year.
Yeah.
One of those two coaches. Mike, you're absolutely right. If Duke runs it, that's just a foregone conclusion that Krzyzewski's going to get.
It's a sentimental thing. Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
So I'm not going to ask any more picks on this part because this is the next one. Mike, does Keegan Murray stay?
No, I can't imagine that he won't go pro.
Okay.
Chris Murray will stay.
Yeah, Brother Tommy, your thought.
I'll actually, and I know this is a sacrilege to say, but I would lose respect for him if he did stay. Everyone talks about the Lloyds policy. Yeah, you can get $5 million, but if he goes in the draft, he's going to get $15 million.
Hank, I'm surprised you're asking that. Have you heard something that he might be?
A lot of people are saying the verbiage. There are a lot of people saying his post-game verbiage suggested he might stay. There are a lot of people saying that.
Because it left
a bad
taste in his mouth, and he wants to.
Kenyon has been on the both on Hawkeye Report and on Twitter has talked about.
Well, I mean,
although he hasn't said he's definitely going or anything like that, he has eschewed the stuff of, well, he needs to stay and get his degree, or that he's not as great. You know, he's been on the honor roll every semester at Iowa. He's going
to
graduate.
He's foolish to stay. Guess what? You can go back to college.
Yeah.
You can go back to college when you're 26, 36, 46, 56. You can't go back to the NBA and say, hey, I want that $100 million.
If you're a top five or six pick in the NBA, how can you not go?
Yeah,
right.
Well,
I think he dropped his stock to about eight or nine, but still, how can you not go? But,
well,
right.
frankly, what he did the last couple minutes of the Richmond game all but show why we lost the game.
Right.
Because we didn't go to him earlier. We should have. I mean, at one point in the game.
Yeah, where was he
the first 35 minutes of the game? There were five Iowa guys on the court, all of them above the free throw line, all of them outside the arc. And there was nobody rotating down low. Now, I don't know, you know, what was going on there, but once we went inside to Keegan, it showed. I mean, he clearly just willed the last couple baskets in. I mean, no matter how.
Guys, I'm going to reiterate an earlier point. My wife did watch the game. I did not. But it's very interesting what you just said about Keegan Murray when they went to him and all of that. According to my wife, you know who took most of the shots? We're right back to the coach's son.
Yeah, Patrick.
And that to me, and I heard it third party. I have not rewatched it. I'm not going to rewatch it.
Well,
take my wife at her word.
Patrick was the only one that was able to hit the side of a barn most of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Unfortunately.
To be blunt.
Yeah.
But and I understand that, but it's like I told Hank all year. It has to do with chemistry. It has to do with rhythm in a basketball game and stuff. He probably, since he was the only one hitting it and doing it, probably took the rhythm away from the rest of the team. I know I'm getting into the weeds on this one. It's complicated as shit, but I don't like him. I don't like that dynamic. But all right, Hank, I'm sorry, but no.
It's interesting to me that our
player of the year is not getting the ball until it's too late.
Yeah. Well, and I think give credit to Richmond. They took us out of our game. They did do that. They didn't, you know.
I don't give credit to any team that loses to the following game by 25 points. I take away credit from us. I'm not doing coach speak after the game. Oh, I'm going to give them credit. No. I take all the credit away from us. I'm not playing that game. Give credit to Richmond. No, I'm not. They lose by 25 points.
Here's the thing, Hank. Here's the thing why I don't give them a lot of credit. I mean, obviously, I want to give them some credit for that. But, look, they didn't even shoot that well.
They missed
a ton of shots. The problem is Iowa had how many wide open shots they couldn't make a damn thing. And then just the poor defense there, those inbounds, like three times in a row there in about a three-minute span, they were getting inbounds right underneath the basket for easy layups a couple of times when they only had like 2 or 3 seconds to take the damn shot. How can that happen?
No, I know.
I mean,
said it all year, defense and rebounding would
play a brainless game.
Yeah,
I said it all year.
We would have
spurts 3 or 4 games where we play good defense, but there again, it goes back to the shooter. It's not ingrained in them. It's pyrite. It's fool's gold. Everyone was saying, "Oh, we're playing defense now." No, we're not. We're playing defense at specific times of the game. Teams that win play defense the whole game, all 40 minutes, and that's.
You can point to defensive lapses like I just did. We held them to 67 points.
Yep.
We should, with the offense we have, you hold any team to 67 points, Iowa should win by at least 10, 15 points.
Yep. So,
yeah.
Hey, guys.
Our offense sucked. That was the problem.
Hey, guys, we got to cut it short. We're down into 30 seconds because it was a short night tonight. But thanks for being on, both you guys. And hold your final four is
Purdue, Duke, Arizona, and Auburn. I know Brother Tommy's got Arizona to win it all.
Wait, I forgot. It can't be Auburn.
Yeah, it can't be Auburn. They're out.
That was his original final
four. Oh, you're talking about
who
he picked at the beginning.
Yeah, I think was his. So anyway, okay, guys, we're out. It's 10 seconds left. So thanks for being on, and we will hear you all next week. I want to thank everyone for being here. Holger, Indy, T. Bodie, Alaskan in the chat room, Sue, Big Sister, Tommy, Mike, T. Bodie on the phones. Thanks, folks, for being here. And thanks, Willita Thomas, for the interview. Talk to y'all later, folks.
Have a great one.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.